And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Raptors Reasonless Podcast. I'm your host, Blake Murphy. Joining me, as always, Eric Green. What's up, buddy?
Good morning, sweet world. Real ones now. I'm all right. How are you doing?
Good. Yes. Happy 15th pod-iversary to our friends over at No Dunks, formerly the Starters, formerly the Basketball Jones. Great guys. Great podcast. Happy 15th anniversary. Also, happy one-year anniversary to our friends at the Dishes and Dime podcast, a great all-female podcast covering the Toronto Raptors. It's their one-year anniversary. They're doing a special live stream Wednesday at 7. So if you haven't checked them out, that's a great episode to check out. And if you have checked them out, well, mark your calendar for that. I'm sure you're excited for it. Eric, this is Raptors Reasonless. We have no idea when our podiversary might be. We lost track of how many episodes we've done because we've jumped from SoundCloud to The Athletic to normal podcast platforms. Do you want to just throw out a random number and we'll say that that is this episode number?
How long? We didn't start doing it right away at The Athletic. I think it took a while. Am I wrong? Or did we start like right in 2016 when I started here?
No, because 2016, I would have been still doing the Raptors Republic podcast as my main podcast.
So let's say we've been doing it for about 2.5-3 calendar years. What, episode like 78? Does that seem reasonable?
Sure.
Yeah, the 78th episode extravaganza here for you today. When you were doing your ad read just before, I really wanted to yell "iconic" when you said the word "iconic," but I didn't.
Yeah, it's tough not to.
Yeah,
but you know, if we want that money, I better read those straight. By the way, our very first Raptors Reasonless podcast episode was January 10th, 2017. So last week was actually our 4-year podiversary.
Yeah.
What a time! Everyone's starting podcasts at the start of a new year. What a novel idea.
Well. It's time has flown by in some ways. As Modest Mouse said, the years go fast and the days go so slow.
Yeah, sure. Eric, that puts us 1 year away from a big podiversary, the 5-year, where you could go to BlueNile.com and get me a podcast commitment ring. 10-10 will be all sold out by then, but
Is one of them with like a little microphone etched into it somehow, like a little diamond microphone?
I don't know.
They'll...
Eric, everyone listening to this and following us on Twitter knows that I'm terminally single, so I have never looked for rings.
Well, let me tell you.
You would know much better.
Yeah, no, I was thinking I should have read that. You know, because they would have heard the knowledge I'd be bringing you.
Yes.
It's not a fun process.
Married guy, future homeowner.
Well, I mean, we're assuming a lot of things with that. But yes, the things are trending in that direction, sure.
Yeah. I mean, your standards will just get lower, right? The longer this goes on. I'm talking about the house, not marriage.
Well, I mean,
not me projecting at all.
I'm just going to leave that one totally clear. Yeah. But yes, I mean, the correct home should come to us. Things that are not fun to buy, and I'm very aware that these are all first world problems, so please don't come at me with your ats about how I'm privileged to have been looking for engagement rings and houses in the city of Toronto. I know, it's ridiculous. That doesn't make the process fun. That's all I'm saying. It's very stressful. Okay.
Did I tell you I got a new place that I move into March 1st?
You did tell me. I don't think you told the listeners.
Well, I'm not going to say where because these
Yeah,
these listeners, if they're angry at one of my takes, I don't want to catch one in the
new area though, you know? For you, I think.
Yeah. It's only like a 10-minute drive or so, but it's a new neighborhood, so it'll be nice. It'll be the one, two, three, four, fifth different neighborhood in the city I've lived in. So, and this will be the furthest east.
That's more
not quite a Eric Green level of east, yeah, but
that's more homes than I've lived in my entire life.
Wow. I have lived in, this will be my, I want to say 17th place that I've lived.
Oh my God.
So wow. The place I'm currently in now, I've been at for 3.5 years, and it's the longest I've lived at a place since like the stretch of time, grade 7 to grade 10.
Well, I remember when you moved there, and then like after 6 months, you're like, you were already getting like trigger finger on wanting to move, because that's just like, you just get... You want to see new? I don't know. I'm not going to diagnose you here, but
I mean, situations change. Yeah. Like when I was a kid, you know, my parents were unmarried and surprised to have me, so we lived in an apartment, and then
you just showed up,
and then they got married and found, you know, took the next step up, and then I had two brothers, and they took the next step up, and then they got separated.
The next step down.
Yeah, and then I went away to university, and they took another step down, and then, you know, back and forth like that.
Yeah, but what's interesting to me, I guess, is that it shouldn't be a surprise, but it's like, it's formative, and like, you look to, like, I think there's a lot of you that has looked to move. Like, you don't...
Oh, yeah.
You don't,
yeah, I moved out to Vancouver for a bit. I've bounced around.
Like, Toronto. You don't want to stay in a place too long, it seems to me, is what I'm trying to say. And that's not
short contracts, buddy.
Yeah.
One year with a player option over and over again. Just roll that one plus one.
Yeah, you're like LeBron with, LeBron with Cleveland here.
Yeah. Or that was the old John Gibbons Blue Jays deal, too, I think, was that he was just, like, constantly on a one-year deal with a team option.
I thought it was, anyway, yes, that was a great deal. Anyway, I just said I hated shopping for rings and houses. I also, I found moving when I wasn't buying, just renting. I find the whole moving process terrible, so it's sort of confusing to me why that would be attractive to you, but it takes all different folks.
Yeah, and speaking quickly of the Blue Jays, make sure to, as the baseball season picks up, make sure to check out our Blue Jays podcast, Birds All Day. The Blue Jays have all these new toys like Tyler Chatwood and Kirby Yates. You know, it's not George Springer. It's not DJ LeMahieu. It's not, you know, any of the big name pitchers that have been traded, or even the kind of lesser known pitchers like Joe Musgrove, who people certainly didn't have a meltdown about going to the Padres. The Padres have all the good players, by the way.
Yeah.
It's too bad. Not to turn this into a baseball podcast, but make sure if you are a Blue Jays fan to check out Birds All Day. It's still called Birds All Day, right?
They haven't consulted me on any name change, but I know Drew Fair Service continues to host. The Mets fired their GM. So one wonders how that might affect their search for or their hunt of George Springer.
Yeah, that's about the 417th biggest consideration to come out of that Mets story.
It's probably
way down the list.
It's problematic, but I mean, we were talking about the Jays. That's all. I'm not.
Yeah,
trying
we're now 8 minutes into a podcast and haven't talked about the Raptors.
This banter.
This is Raptors Reasonableist. By the way, if you are 8 minutes into this podcast and you're like, geez, I just want to talk about the Raptors, you can head to theathletic.com/we the six. Sign up there for all the written content. There's a deal there right now for $3.99 a month, which is a nice discount off the regular price. And then you don't have to listen to 8 minutes of banter. You occasionally get two or three paragraphs about music or wrestling or Friday Night Lights before you get your story. But you could scroll down, which you can't do on this podcast, because you never know when we're actually going to start talking about the Raptors.
You get the vintage Eric Kareed four-paragraph lead that is about what the story is not about. That's my formula. Anyway.
Clear eyes, full hearts, long twos.
Yeah, I was very pleased for you, man.
Yeah. Okay, so we are talking about the Toronto Raptors. They had a really strong week. Since we last talked, they have won three games. They went 3-0. to improve to 5-8. They beat the Charlotte Hornets in a pair of one possession games, and then they blew out the Dallas Mavericks on Monday, which was good to see. The Mavericks, of course, four or five players shorthanded due to health and safety protocols, also on the second night of a back-to-back. They are struggling a little bit right now, and Charlotte has decidedly come down to earth after a fun LaMelo Ball-fueled start to the season. So certainly not three wins that'll look like marquee wins down the line, but when you entered the week 2-8, you can't really complain about any kind of wins you're getting. The Raptors are now 5-8. They now have a positive point differential on the season. They have the point differential of what should maybe be a 7-6 team. They're 15th in the league in net rating. And if you were worried that when we talked about, hey, is it too early? Is it not too early to panic? Despite being 5-8, they are now only one game out of sixth in the Eastern Conference. So things have changed quickly, and things could look pretty different after the tough week ahead, where they have four pretty tough games, two more of those two-game series, which I think because they had already done a two-game series against Charlotte in the preseason, and because Gordon Hayward didn't play in the first game and then played in the second game, so there was like a fundamental personnel change. I didn't find that series as interesting from a, like, how will you tweak things between games stance, because Charlotte ratcheted up the zone, but the Raptors had to kind of change their defense because Hayward was coming in. Anyway, Eric, high level, your thoughts on the Raptors 3-0 week?
They weren't as good as they were on the West Coast trip. That was sort of my first takeaway. I mean, that might not be fair. I guess Pascal Siakam wasn't as good, and that's like the thing that I'm most interested in from a big picture standpoint. But he did have a nice second half against Dallas, as Kyle Lowry was quick to point out. By the way, Kyle Lowry, what a leader! Just freaking deflecting praise like he's the host of the Raptors Reasonablists. Yeah. And
Stanley Johnson too, though. Yeah. Deflecting praise, just getting into an argument with Mike Ganter of the Toronto Sun about whether or not Stanley Johnson did a good job on defense on Luka.
I did nothing. Yeah. I was barely there at all. Anyway, it allowed me for a nice quasi joke afterward. So thanks, Ganter, and thanks, Stanley Johnson. But Kyle Lowry, who was awesome in the third quarter and basically awesome all night against the Mavericks, said it was really Pascal Siakam who got himself going, which got the Raptors going. And I find that claim a bit dubious, but he did have a better second half. But on the whole, I mean, they took care of business. It was a very take care of businessy type week. The Charlotte wins, I don't think, were very impressive. They were full of holes. They messed up late game execution defensively in both games and got away with it. One you can read about in the last 2 minute report. The Dallas game was, you know, probably all things considered their best game of the year, albeit
against, certainly defensively.
Yeah, albeit against a deflated or an undermanned, I should say, Mavericks team dealing with the health and safety protocols. But, you know, with OG Anunoby and Stanley Johnson leading the charge, and this is what I wrote about, they did a very nice job on Luka Doncic. And that is sort of what was reminiscent about the effort last year, is they really found a way to corral and control a certified superstar, all asterisks, the health issues, plus the back-to-back that I did not mention, notwithstanding.
Yeah, so, you know, it was an interesting thing coming in, because you look at where the Raptors have struggled so far this year, and I think Siakam's got the most headlines, and then the continued struggles from the pair of traditional centers has been kind of the B plot on the struggles. And if you compare, especially with the centers, if you compare how the Raptors have defended this year so far to how they defended last year, something like a Doncic matchup is a big concern, because last year, you know, they pretty famously were shutting down stars left and right, and what that would create was a lot of, you know, 4-on-3 underneath the traps or underneath the doubles. And part of the reason that that could succeed was there was just so much connectivity in terms of, okay, who has what help assignment, what after the trap, where are you recovering to once a Harden or a Doncic or a LeBron James gets the ball out? And a lot of that had to do with, you had two centers that knew the system well and you could rely on kind of in pseudo drop, either to be part of the trap or to be a part of that 4-on-3 and continue to seal off the paint against, you know, guys who are attacking wild closeouts and stuff like that. So you look at that and how they succeeded, and then you look at the way this team's played so far, and maybe you're concerned. If you put the extra bodies on Doncic, then, you know, an Aaron Baines at center or even a Chris Boucher at center who, you know, is great at some things defensively, but still isn't, you know, there's a reason him and Stanley Johnson have done the offense-defense substitutions at times. He doesn't have the full trust of the coaching staff yet in a traditional defensive scheme. And maybe you were concerned about that. And I think, you know, early on they lost Porzingis a couple times because of the attention that they were giving Doncic. But I think they figured it out. And I think one of those tweaks was, you know, Siakam kind of became the rim protector instead of Boucher. So Boucher could continue blocking a league-leading amount of three-point shots. He's at 8 already in just 13 games. But yeah, it worked out better than you would have anticipated. And again, the Mavs a little shorthanded, but the Raptors looking more like themselves defensively is important, because so far they've been pretty mediocre on that end. And that's where we thought that they would be able to establish a floor this year. We figured the half-court offense would be what it's been, and that's a little up and down. They've probably even overperformed on the offensive end, considering that they haven't been as lethal a transition team. But that defense is their stabilizer and where they need to be. And, you know, the fact that they only trust six guys right now, and one of those, Norman Powell, has not been good defensively, it's tough sometimes for them to lock in for kind of, you know, the idea of locking in for 48 minutes is kind of a myth. But the ability to lock in for 24 seconds of connectedness and then get the defensive rebound hasn't been there. And was there a little better on Monday. So there are going to be plenty of tests for that coming up. You know, they have two against the Heat and two against the Pacers. And against the Heat, you're looking, you know, where does Chris Boucher fit in a defensive scheme where Bam is on the floor? And, you know, the Raptors put OG on Bam, which they did last year and was a lot of fun, because then you can switch those Duncan Robinson actions. You know, Boucher's maybe on an Andre Iguodala or something like that. And how does he look in that role? And then you look ahead to the Pacers, and, you know, Boucher has revenge to get against Domantas Sabonis. Boucher's first ever, like, real NBA action during his G League season came against the Pacers, and Sabonis kind of bodied him, and that was it for Boucher getting playing time for a little bit. So some revenge there, and the Pacers do start two more traditional bigs in Sabonis and Turner. So some good challenges ahead for the steps the team took defensively. Eric, I want to circle back to your Lowry comments before we get into some of the, I guess, still residual concerns. Kyle Lowry, after his game Monday, is now leading the team in scoring. He's leading the team in assists, and he is third on the team in rebounding. He also, of course, has the best on-off on the roster other than Chris Boucher, who just has these monstrous numbers because of how poorly they've played with traditional centers. Actually, I think the numbers have tilted now, where Norm has a better on-off than Lowry too, largely because all of his minutes have come with Boucher. Kyle Lowry is still really awesome, and I think that we should just take a minute to appreciate it.
Yeah. I mean, he's good. It's, you know, I'll turn 35 in March. He's just keeps going. He keeps impacting, winning at a high level. I mean, we are not even talking about the shot against Charlotte, where they decided, like, our best option is just a Kyle Lowry ISO on a player 6 inches taller than him. And he, you know, takes what's a bad shot by, you know, just from a shot chart perspective, a contested 20-footer, not too dissimilar to the one he hit over Matthew Dellavedova all those years ago against Cleveland. I think he might have had, that was either a three or he had a foot on the line that was a bit deeper, but same idea, step back jumper, and you couldn't even hate it.
Like, you, hey, look, we've always said this about the mid-range, is that it's not bad in and of itself. You need it if you're going to be a high usage guy with the ball in your hands or whatever. And look, the end of game scenarios like that are very much a, if you can get a shot off against whatever the defense is doing, you got to be it. You got to take it. And, you know, that's not, I certainly wouldn't want him to take that shot 10 times a game, but if he can get that off and he does get that off and, you know, who was it last year that he was, it was against Kemba, wasn't it? That he did the same thing and he just kind of threw the ass out to back him down and hit.
Yeah. Kind of not quite the same shot. Like he was backing him down.
My point is that Lowry knows how to create space for himself to get a shot.
Yes.
And in late game scenarios, that's what you're
and
doing. That's priority one.
I think it's, our colleague, great. Now I'm,
Seth.
Yeah, Seth Partnow, who says that the mid-range isn't dead, it's just the province of stars. And yes. That's the whole point here, is that Kyle Lowry is still a dang star. And that's pretty amazing, considering the size and the age and all the things we've talked about for so long with him. He's great.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Yes, probably not the best thing for the team over the course of 72 that Lowry is their leader in just about every stat category again. Part of that is due to the continued up and down play of Pascal Siakam. Before we dive a little deeper on Siakam, I just want to talk about Fred VanVleet. On Monday at theathletic.com, I had a piece go up that kind of dove into VanVleet's offensive progression this year, and he's still not finishing particularly well, and his three-point percentage is down in part because he's taking more pull-up jumpers. But he's a guy who has really added to his mid-range and floater-range package in a way that's, you know, improved his scoring capability. He's still a tad below where you'd want him to be in terms of true shooting percentage, especially since he's using more possessions this year. But he's also improved as a playmaker, I think, in the pick and roll, especially, and then kicking out off of drive. So VanVleet kind of right there with Lowry and Siakam. They're actually averaging 19.1, 19.0, and 18.9 points. So that's got to be the closest three lead scorers have ever been in terms of stats. But I think, you know, Monday aside, because I didn't think VanVleet had a very good game on Monday, he's obviously very good defensively. I think he's still playing at kind of an all-defense-ish level right now. So the floor is so high for his style of play. And I think he's taking steps. And I know it can be frustrating sometimes that if you were trying to maximize every single possession on its own, just to maximize that possession, I think VanVleet would have the ball in his hands less than he does, and he would be initiating less than he is, because he is their best catch and shoot threat, and because the offense does tend to flow a little better with the ball in the hands of Lowry or Siakam. But I think it's also important to remember that VanVleet's in year one of a four-year deal. He's still only in his fifth season, and there's value in continuing to give him those reps. Where are you at with VanVleet and how what he's shown over the first 13 here, Eric?
Yeah, I think he's been pretty good. Until last night, I don't think he'd had like any real abject poor games. And even then, he was a big part of the trapping or the semi-regular trapping scheme that they threw at Luka Doncic. So his value never disappears entirely, which should go without saying, but I just said it. He seems like he's stepping into more mid-range jumpers, which was part of your story. It just, to me, it seems like they're not only a end of shot clock option, but like if there's like a decent one with 10 or 12 left, he might take it, which I don't think is the worst thing. It's a good thing long-term for his development to try and make that a more efficient shot. And the way to do that is reps and taking it when it's, you know, semi-open as opposed to only wide open. You want to see him get better at the rim. Can he? I mean, he certainly has a lot of creative finishes, but he's put into awkward situations a lot, like around the rim, just because he has so much to overcome from a size and athleticism perspective. And when he does finish, it looks pretty amazing. And yeah, he's going to have to find a way to, I guess another thing I'd like to see is him get the free throws up. And I think that's another thing he would say he would like to see, while not necessarily putting the onus on himself, if you get my drift. And
yeah, it's unusual for a guy to see the usage spike, to be a veteran, to be playing better in a lot of areas, and then see his free throw rate kind of cut in half.
Yeah, and I think that will normalize to a certain extent. And you know, maybe Nick Nurse needs to get fined at some point talking about Fred VanVleet, as he did that one year about
Kawhi. If Fred's taking technical fouls and eating that pay for Stanley Johnson,
what a mensch.
Someone's got to get Fred VanVleet's back and earn a tech or a fine for Fred VanVleet.
Yeah, but where does that stop? With God? Does it stop with God picking up a tech for Masai? But yes.
No, you could go, it probably stops at Uncle Larry. you know, then Masai gets the fine for Nick, and then that just gets folded into the Masai contract that is apparently never coming.
or the Bobby Webster contract.
Also apparently never coming.
No, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
It's almost done, though. That's what they say.
Bobby, the holdup with Bobby is he wants an entire room in OVO Center converted into a cafe that he can run. So
that'd be the type of petty shit that I would insist on if I had.
Yes,
such power.
We know lead writer Eric Green.
Yeah, anywho. I would think that over time he will start to get, I don't think it's been egregious. And I think like even Lowry, like small guards, when there's body contact and they're on the floor so often, they don't always get the call because like there can be body contact. And if the defender is going up vertically at the rim, that is legal defense. If you're not like contorting your body in a non-vertical way, so that's
Raptors guards do be falling on those layup attempts.
So that's sort of where I'm at with him, and you know, Lowry's definitely learned how to use his body effectively to at least create space for himself and make those looks easier. Like he had a few finishes against Dallas. There was one where he just like, it was like a straightaway bank layup, almost like a it was at the end. I want to say it was at the end of a quarter, but I'm not absolutely positive. That was just the degree of difficulty on that shot was very difficult. And I think, I mean, VanVleet certainly has some more to take from Kyle. Not that they're the same player, they're different. But, you know, from that perspective, he can certainly learn a bit more and apply a bit more. But overall, he's been very good, continues to be a really important piece of the team, did an awesome job on Steph Curry. He's good.
Sure is. Do you want to talk more positives or do you want to get negative?
Let's look at the time. I mean, we can go. I mean, they won 3-0. Let's hit one more positive.
All right. Chris Boucher rules.
Yeah. Chris, so I have a question for you. Yes. More likely, what is the most likely of these three? Most improved, sixth man of the year, or... I'm just going to say All-Star. All-Star seems really unlikely, but I'll throw in All-Star.
I'm going to say most improved, just because right now he would probably be the sixth man of the year, but that requires him to come off the bench for at least half of his game. So if we assume that he's going to play all 72, he then only has 22 starts or 22 games off the bench left before he would become ineligible he can start 32 games. 36 games And that could be coming, and that's kind of what I wanted to talk about. Boucher is averaging 24 minutes. He, in those 24 minutes, putting up 16 points on a 60-45-78 shooting split. Also second to only Pascal Siakam on the team in rebounding. Has turned the ball over very rarely. Is leading the team in shot blocking and net rating and on-off and all that stuff. He has been tremendous statistically, and it's led to a bit of an every-game question of, should Boucher be starting? And now the argument for that would be that he's been one of their five best players, and you want to play those guys as much as possible. And in the highest, you know, kind of leverage minutes, which are starting the game and ending the game, the counter to that would be, A, that you have to get Baines or Len going at some point and get them comfortable. B, that you like Boucher's energy off the bench because you don't have a lot of scoring punch off the bench, and he kind of provides that. And C, a small concern about foul trouble if Boucher starts against more traditional centers. He is averaging 3 fouls in just 24 minutes. Him, Baines, Len, and Siakam have all been very foul-prone to start the year. So, Eric, Chris Boucher has been amazing. He's been one of the better stories of the NBA season so far. Should he eventually be starting for the Raptors?
I think my answer is more often than not, he should be the starter. If there's like an unworkable matchup, I don't mind giving Baines what he's currently getting now. The, you know, 10 minutes
the
a game.
The Kafa special, yeah.
And I mean, I don't, as Nick Nurse said, I don't think he was the problem against Charlotte on Saturday night. They went even, although at a very low scoring rate against Dallas to start the game. I think they were both in his minutes. He was a neutral plus minus, and the ratings were like 87. So that's not great, and he certainly is not finding really a way into the offense other than by screening. And I would also say on that end that Pascal Siakam sure looks a lot better when one of them isn't on the floor, one of them being Baines or Len. And I think that shouldn't necessarily be the case, especially with Baines, but that's what I've seen, and I'm guessing you would agree. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, the spacing's a little off, yeah. Right? Like teams right now, because of Baines' confidence level and how poorly he's shooting the ball, are not respecting him from the outside. And that means that Baines has been in the dunker spot a lot more often because, you know, as much as he's a great screener, he's not quite as dynamic handling the ball or in dribble handoff as some of the other options. So the spacing can get kind of cramped. And there's more you can do about that, for sure. You can have Baines and Siakam in actions together a little bit more. You know, Len so far has been a bit more of a three-point threat on low volume. There's stuff you can figure out, but right now it certainly looks like Pascal is having more trouble with a traditional center out there, and that's maybe part of why he isn't shooting as well overall. But I guess that's a natural transition point to some of the negatives we have to talk about, Eric, which is more of a sweet spot for us. Last podcast, we talked about the steps Pascal Siakam was taking forward. He'd scored a little better. He'd looked a little more comfortable getting to the front of the rim. He was passing the ball extremely well. Bit of a step back over the second Charlotte game and the first half of the Dallas game before he turned it around. I don't think it's realistic to envision his season as like, oh, at some point everything's just going to click and it'll be permanently fixed. These things take time and aren't linear. But I was at least a little disappointed with, after he played so well and the process side of things had improved so much for a couple games there, that it seemed to regress and needed kind of the halftime shakeup after three iffy halves, you know, heading into the second half of that Dallas game. Would you agree? Where's Siakam at for you right now? Other than, you know, it's obviously pretty up and down for him.
Yeah, I mean, they were disappointing, his play in the time you mentioned. I am, like, getting pretty concerned about the jumper. For the dude who keeps on messaging, can Pascal not hit a three anymore? As I tweeted last night, I've seen your messages in each of the last three games, and they consider them acknowledged. I'm seeing the same stuff you are. But
Yeah, the percentage is the percentage.
Yeah, like
it's 26% right
now.
Yeah,
it's not good.
But also, like 2 weeks ago, people were melting down over OG's 3-point shooting, and now he's at 37%.
Yeah, like it's not something I'm horribly concerned about, but like I think the volume is down, and I know the percentage is down, and that sort of speaks to him trying to gain stability in other areas. I think his jumper, his mid-range jumper, is looking. The form is looking really inconsistent to me.
That Dirk attempt yesterday.
But there's a bunch of them. Like he's, I think he's sort of defaulting to like shooting off his back heel, and I know that's not normal because at near the end of the game, I saw him go straight up and down with a shot. Like so, you know, that's it's a good tool to have when you need to create space for yourself. Like that, you want it in your repertoire, especially as the type of player he is. But you don't need to default to that when you know they're just giving you a semi-contested mid-ranger. Like you could just go straight up and down. So I mean, that's my very, you know, not quite amateur but not quite professional analysis on his jumper. And he was just a little more passive. And again, that has to do with some spacing issues and, you know, maybe Dallas and Charlotte having a few better options to guard him than the previous teams. But at the same time, and I sort of looked at what OG Anunoby was doing against Kristaps Porzingis in the first half. And like he was not very successful, OG, at driving. But he was going right at him and making like decent moves, and it was sort of Anunoby's, you know, his handle and his, you know, is not his strongest weapon, obviously. But by seeing him do what he's doing, you're thinking, why can't Pascal do some reasonable facsimile of that? Because Porzingis, for all his length, is a pretty flat-footed defender, and you would like to see him tested a bit more. And there was just too much, I think it was just passiveness, to be honest, to start the game. And he found his way into the paint and got deep position on certain plays in the second half. And hopefully that's a sign of things to come. His touch is, like, I do think his touch around the rim is looking that is sort of carried over a bit from the West Coast trip. Like he's hitting a lot more of those, you know, shorter hook shots. And that's something to be kind of excited about if you want to turn this into a bit of a positive.
I don't.
Okay.
OG, by the way, in terms of OG's offense, the solution for OG's offense is very easy. It's just keep stealing the ball and running it in for dunks.
Yeah, pick sixes.
Yes. Second in the league in steals right now to only Larry Nance is OG Anunoby.
You can Nance if you want to, my friend.
Didn't just come here to Nance. You know? good for OG.
He's very good.
He's been really good defensively, too. I think him and Fred have been the kind of stabilizers defensively. I thought so far, you know, Lowry obviously does a ton of great team side defense stuff well. He hasn't been quite Kyle Lowry levels at the point of attack.
Before the last two games, the defensive splits with and without Kyle were just hilarious.
Now, I don't think they were necessarily represented. Because, like I said, I don't think Lowry has been great on the ball, but he's such a smart team defender. Like, there was even the one play yesterday where he almost let himself get beat so that he could strip the ball from a different angle. It was really good. And obviously the help being there helped with that. I forget who it was that was taking it at him, but he basically was like, okay, I'm going to lose this matchup. I'm going to change the angle and just swipe.
Probably Jalen Brunson. And he was giving him the Villanova business.
I mention this only because I think part of the Siakam discussion at some point might need to be that he hasn't been himself defensively either. And I know that his role has changed around a lot because, you know, when Boucher's out there, sometimes they use him as the rim protector and it is very switchy and he is obviously carrying a big load on offense. But I think that, you know, he needs to, that's one of the things you can control, right? Yeah. When your shot's not dropping or whatever is that your your defense can come up. By the way, our colleague Sean Strania just tweeted that Miles Turner has a slight fracture in his right hand and will be reevaluated in the coming days. So our earlier discussion of Boucher against the Pacers in that Sunday-Monday back-to-back may change. Hope Miles Turner gets well soon because he's had a super fun start to the season.
Also, while we're mentioning health stuff, Jimmy Butler has missed the last three games with health and safety stuff. We obviously don't know what his situation is specifically. There are a few members of the Heat in the same situation, so we'll see.
Yeah, and Alex Len on the Raptor side in the health and safety protocols. Although he did post an Instagram story from the beach today, so maybe he's out of quarantine now, whatever was going on.
Or he has a personal beach.
That's true also. Eric, one more, I guess not even negative, just kind of, it's something we've been touching on a lot. The bench has stabilized a little bit. Norman Powell and Chris Boucher are obviously parts of that. Stanley Johnson appears to be set and ahead of Yuta Watanabe for the time being, which is fine. Stanley's been good, okay to good. I would go as far as he's been really good defensively, and then offensively, teams are putting centers on him and doubling off of him aggressively, so they're going to have to figure out ways to make that work.
He's made the occasional shot.
He's hitting the open threes. It's more about like...
Yeah, it hurts, you know, it hurts what you're trying to treat him from like a team that, perspective. For sure.
Yeah, exactly. Like, the fact that Stanley's hit a couple of those does not mean that the offense has been good. It just means that it hasn't been as bad as it could be.
Yeah.
The bigger question in my mind is that extra guard spot. We'll call it the ninth man, for lack of a better term. Terrence Davis was once again in that spot on Monday, picked up five fouls in 11 or 12 minutes. Did score a couple quick buckets, but I thought kind of erased them with some quick mistakes at both ends of the
I enjoyed William Liu's question last night. Wait, were you...
What's the deal with Terrence Davis, yeah, basically?
What's the deal with Terrence Davis and his fouls?
So, look, I understand that the Terrence Davis conversation has gotten a little messy because anytime you tweet a criticism about his play, there are the segment of people who think that's dug into his ongoing legal issues, and there are people who don't even want to talk about his play because of the seriousness of the accusations and charges.
Which sometimes includes us, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to have that wrapped up and be able to talk about this in a way that I feel better
about. But for now, let's just, for the moment, for this conversation.
His next court date is about a month away.
Yeah.
So let's just talk on the basketball side. I think if you strip the other stuff away, he still hasn't really warranted the opportunities that he's gotten with his play. Now, if we strip garbage time out of it, Davis has played 80 minutes. Malachi Flynn, 65, Matt Thomas, 47, and DeAndre Bembry, 11. Assuming that Paul Watson is not going to get those guard minutes, those are kind of the four guys battling for it. Bembry, obviously, we just haven't seen enough of to really judge. And Malachi Flynn, I mean, he's been a rookie. Like, all else equal, I would lean toward Flynn getting those minutes because you have 4 years invested in him, and I think he has the highest upside of those guys. You know, if we're taking this game to game and you're prioritizing, you know, winning each game, are you at least surprised that Matt Thomas hasn't gotten another shot at it yet?
I am. I'm enjoying it for our friend Alex Wong's speculation about why it's not happening. Like I said, I think I said this last week, I'm not quite sure what he did. Like, I didn't think what he was doing defensively was, like, egregiously worse than what, you know, Flynn or Davis were doing prior to that. And given that you're looking, like, especially if you're playing Stanley Johnson, if you want to offset the spacing issues, well, there's a possibility.
And I think they have. Like, they've tried to separate, at least last night, it looked like they were trying to separate Davis and Johnson a little bit. Because, I mean, I guess that's not... Davis kind of helps the spacing issues, but they didn't want to have those two guys on the floor together, it seemed like.
Yeah, I just think, like, Thomas is a good way to do that. And, like, maybe he's... I mean, not maybe. Like, he's certainly, just from, like, an athleticism perspective, he's less... You know, they like to play more zone when Thomas is in. But, Like, it's not as if Terrence Davis... not as if Terrence Davis isn't being picked on anyway. Like, the guy committed 5 fouls in 16 minutes. I think he's shown some nice things. Like, he's had a few nice drives each day. Like, I really liked what he did for most of last year, and the defensive problems weren't as glaring until, you know, later on in the season and the playoffs, at least to me. And maybe that's just the product of being a rookie and focusing more on what a guy can do and than what a guy can't, because that's sort of how, I mean, my perspective works a lot. I think maybe, you know, that's probably more common than not. But, you know, like you said, I don't think Davis has locked that down or should have locked that down. And I don't think he has. Like, he's not that far removed from being a DNP CD. So I think Thomas at some point will cycle back in there.
It's been a long time. He hasn't played other than garbage time in 10 games now.
It's weird. I think Flynn's been fine. Nothing special, but he's been fine. I think it's about time. But I can't predict what Nick Nurse is going to do. He's stuck with Patrick McCaw for a while last year, if you don't remember or forget.
Yes.
If
you now,
I forget. Anyway,
Patrick McCaw, who, by the way, Nick Nurse said Monday is not making great progress. He's been kind of week to week since they reconvened for camp, and it doesn't sound like a McCaw return is imminent. As a reminder, he had late season surgery last year to remove a benign mass from his knee. It was the second time he required that procedure.
It sucks.
It does suck. And you know, obviously they'll hit a spot at some point where if it doesn't look like McCaw is going to come back, you know, that roster spot becomes pretty valuable, especially with everything going on. You know, if you can get another guy, you know, if you can convert a Utah and sign a different two-way, or you can call someone up from the G League or whatever, maybe that becomes a consideration. That's probably a little further down the line because they do like McCaw. He is a useful guy to have around. And then also you just, you know, a guy had these issues playing with you. You don't really want to throw him out there and kind of leave him on his own to get back optically and because you like the guy and you don't want to do that to him. But that's something to watch as we get closer to roster churn season, which sets up as March.
Blake Murphy season.
You know it. G League bubble, let's go. All right, Eric, the week ahead, the Raptors will play the Miami Heat on Wednesday and Friday, both at Amalie Arena in Tampa Bay. And then they will go to Indiana for games against the Pacers Sunday afternoon, which should be done in time for you to watch the Bills still. And then Monday, the old Sunday-Monday, one location back-to-back against the Pacers. We mentioned some of the Heat's health issues and Miles Turner's hand, so there's some real uncertainty about who will be available for those games. But they should be fun anyway. Even without Butler, Miami is a tough and challenging team. And the Pacers, the Nate Bjorkgren against Nick Nurse matchup is all sorts
of fun. They're playing for the Johnny Carson Cup. Because Johnny Carson is a famous Iowan, judging by the quick Google search now I just did of famous Iowans.
There you go. Maybe Matt Thomas plays in that game to just really get the Iowa going. Eric, you have been a disaster this year predicting games, but what do you got for us with two against the Heat and two against the Pacers?
I'll split them up evenly, and let's go win, loss, loss, win. How about that?
Win, loss, loss, win. All right.
I've thought about it very carefully, as you can tell.
All right. The Raptors are about to start practice media availability, so we got to get out of here. Guys, that's four games in 6 days, so we won't talk to you, barring something dramatic happening, we won't talk to you until after those two mini-series, probably back to talk to you next Tuesday, once again, where the Raptors will be, according to Eric Green, 7-10. And then probably still with a positive point differential and in the top half of the league in net rating. And because it's the Eastern Conference, who knows? They might be in like fifth by then at 7-10. Guys, thanks so much for listening. Make sure to go to theathletic.com/we the six if you haven't subscribed to the written side of the site yet. I guess you could also like rate, review, all that stuff that I always forget to mention. Eric, thank you so much, man.
See ya.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code The Athletic. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.